Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and I am the host today. Scotty is on assignment. Where? I don't know. He's a mysterious fellow, that Scotty. He could be just about anywhere. He could be sitting next to you right now, ordering a coffee and a donut at wherever you're listening to this at, where they serve coffee and donuts. Who knows? We did record a bit for play today, though, so you will hear Scotty's voice in just a minute. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world, and even sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be Ward 4 City Councilor Mike Salisbury. That will be at the bottom of the hour for the first half of the show. We're going to talk about some of the latest news items from the past week, including the latest update about the American White House and the presidency of Donald Trump, and oh, what a week it has been, but we could say that just about any other week. But it's also been a busy week here on the federal scene in Canada. The federal government has approved the expansion of the Trans Mountain Pipeline, and it was just 24 hours after declaring a climate emergency, which was awesome and definitely not sending mixed messages at all. So I will stop vamping and head right into the pre-recorded bit that I did with Scotty on these two subjects, and then I will see you at the bottom of the hour for music and Mike Salisbury, so stay tuned. So, first thing to discuss is more Trump.
The never-ending Trump saga.
It feels like never-ending. I mean, he just on Tuesday announced that he has formally announced his re-election campaign at an Orlando rally, although he did literally file his papers for re-election on Inauguration Day. Remember that?
No.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could even do that. Or was it like it was just not a mock-up? He did it.
No, yeah. Somebody went over to the election commission and filed those papers.
Didn't even know. It's not like us where you have a period and then you can go and do it.
Right.
I'm just going to run until they won't let me run anymore.
That's also a reliable system where we have a third-party government agency that's nonpartisan run an election.
As it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it sounded like he was pulling out all the stops at this rally, but a lot of it was a rerun. He was talking about everybody lying and the attacks on... He attacked the press. There was a lot of recycling of the old material. Lock her up was being chanted. It's like, yeah, that's so 2016, guys. You really need to, like, drag it into
I saw somebody on Twitter say, Donald Trump is ready to beat Hillary Clinton in 2016. Because
let's do the time warp again and go back and sort that out.
Yeah.
And of course, the classic no collusion, no obstruction, fake news.
CNN sucks. He led
that chant. CNN sucks. But speaking in relation to that, in terms of obstructions, Hope Hicks was testifying on Wednesday, or was supposed to, but it sounds like she refused to answer any questions. She was claiming immunity. And I'm not sure how that will evolve. Do they need to send out subpoenas or something to get her to actually say stuff against her old boss? But for now, she's staying quiet.
Well, it was
quiet.
She would talk about some stuff, but she wouldn't talk about stuff in the White House.
And because anybody has the dirt,
right?
If anybody has soil on Trump, it's Hope Hicks, because she was one of the longest surviving, right? Three years or
and
something
like
that?
And she goes way back, in so much as anyone who's 28 years old can go way back.
For millennials, she's very seasoned. You know.
Yeah, she worked for Ivanka Trump. She was the press person for Ivanka Trump for years when Ivanka was a purse designer and the VP of the Trump organization. And then she was part of the campaign. Literally ironed Donald Trump's pants while he was wearing them. True story.
Yikes.
Also, famously, for her bad taste in men, dating Corey Lewandowski and then habitual alleged wife beater Rob Porter. She's got stories to tell.
Yeah, and I guess when you live that cloistered White House life, then maybe the dating pool is kind of small. But she's, if I understand right, she's pretty quiet. I don't ever remember her saying anything. She's very quiet while on the job.
Yeah. Oh no, she did no press as
as a communications person. Right. She did like
communications director is like somewhere between like the chief of staff and the press secretary, and like they're expected to be seen and be talking. Like they're like one of the main messengers for an administration, and she did no appearances at all. No. I don't even know what her voice sounds like.
But was very deeply loved by Donald and Co.
Oh, yeah.
So will she spill any beans? It remains to be seen. But
well, there was
obstruction word. Has
it was
surfaced.
It was in closed session, so there was nothing aired. But from what I gather from reporters who were in, you know, privy to what happened, she was asked to read portions of the Mueller report in which she was quoted. And they asked her if this was an accurate reflection of her. Or no, they asked her if she told the truth or something like that. If this was the truth as she understood it, as presented in the Mueller report, and her counsel wouldn't let her answer that question. Which is weird, because if that wasn't the truth, then you lied to the special counsel, which means you're eligible to go to jail. And if you didn't lie, then why wouldn't you just say you didn't lie?
They're trying to set her up.
Did you cough? Did you just cough?
Get out of the room. Yeah, what was it? In Bizarro Land news, yeah. From Trump, it's like, you can't just cough. You can't just cough.
Oh, my goodness. That's, you know, it's stuff like that is always so telling about his personality, because there's the thing where it's clearly the performance, because he does the line about how his tax returns are the most beautiful and the most successful.
It is something that he describes it as beautiful, right? Like the finest and tax like return no, anyone's
and
ever
like
seen.
No one would understand them. And then he's interrupted by the chief of staff coughing. But then he goes right back and says, like, oh, should we do that again? Like it's rehearsal. Like they're doing multiple
takes.
Can
we do another take?
Right.
Without the coughing.
So that's the first thing is, like, he really is living in a performance.
Oh, yeah.
And the second thing is, like, telling Mick Mulvaney to get out of the room if he's going to cough. Like, first of all, because it reminds you that Trump is a germaphobe. And the other part is that there's absolutely zero sympathy at all. There's no, like, hey, Mick, are you okay? Hey, Mick, do you want a glass of water? Can someone bring in a glass of water for the chief of staff?
Could you drag him out while we continue?
It's like, no, it's no, get out. Why are you coughing in front of me? Well, I'm trying to do an interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. It was incredible. I'm glad we have it, but it is...
Yeah.
It's so telling.
One of those things. It always takes that... Everything takes that turn with Trump now.
But, you know, there's serious stuff to dig into.
Yes. Like Iran, is that?
Iran, yes. The alleged mining of ships in the Strait of Oman, which Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, and Donald Trump are saying it's Iran.
And Bolton as well.
And Bolton.
Whereas everybody else is like, we need restraint and...
Right.
There's care some, is required.
And there's some disagreement on this point because the captain of the Japanese freighter is unsure. Like, he doesn't think that footage reflects what happened on his ship. And then, you know, we see also, you know, 2.5 years of Trumpism come home to roost, because on the one hand, you have the administration reaching out to Britain, France, and Germany, trying to get them to calm down Iran, because it's also been reported this week Iran is getting closer to having, you know, more enriched uranium in order to facilitate the building of the bomb. And they're starting to, like, no, keep Iran in the deal that the Trump administration abandoned because they hate Obama, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're trying to convince European allies to, you know, use the deal as leverage on Iran. Meanwhile, they've undertaken this campaign over the last 2.5 years. Don't trust the intelligence community. Don't trust the intelligence community. Don't trust them. They're deep staters. They're liars. Witch hunt, blah, 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 blah. And now they're saying, look, the CIA has this evidence. You should believe it. You know,
belief of convenience, right?
And right.
Say, yeah, we believe them now. We didn't believe them. Everything before and after was wrong. But now it's all true.
Right.
And yeah, the first thing I thought of when I heard this was it's echoes of the Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if people know what that is, but it was this bogus setup which sort of launched the U.S. or one of the things that got them deeply in to the Vietnam first conflict and then war.
Yeah.
There was reports that, oh, they're shooting at us, but in actual fact, it didn't actually happen. And something like that was easier to pull off 50 years ago, but now you can get all this analysis. Have I got it right that the Iranian Navy were actually assisting at some point? It was I just saw a shot. I didn't hear any audio of sailors being helped out by the looks of it. Whereas,
I can't remember.
They'll say that's fake news. You know, I don't know.
But I mean, in the strait.
Yeah, well, it's
because
they're within that area. If I understand it right, 1/3 of the world's oil that goes by sea goes through there. So it's a very super strategic point.
Yeah.
And lots of chipping over the years over it. I think there's been other attacks too, but again, not confirmed as to who it was. And that's why certain parties, like I said, the EU is calling for restraint. Like, just, you know, let's find out who it was. No, it was the Iranians.
Right.
So is it going to go there? Sure hope that it doesn't.
No. And if it does, I mean, it's probably going to be America going alone, because you have... I would include Britain in this, because Britain's involvement in Iraq was almost entirely Tony Blair's solo commitment. Like, most of the country did not want to be involved. It was a completely different story than in the U.S.
The largest march they ever had in London was against that.
Europe doesn't want to be involved in another quagmire. They're perfectly fine upholding the Iran deal.
Bad deal.
And, you know, John Bolton... You know, yeah, now he's a Trump guy, but he was also one of the architects of Iraq. And
Johnny the Hawk, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the United States has a pretty poor record of coming up with, like, legit reasons to go to war with countries that begin with I in the Middle East.
Except Israel, but...
But, I mean, it's... There's more reasons to doubt what's going on than reasons to... go along with the U.S., and again, not the least of which was Donald Trump himself saying, you know, don't believe the intelligence. Okay, now believe the intelligence. This suits my interests, so believe the intelligence.
And then once we get what we want, you can stop believing the intelligence again. But
right.
And it wasn't even, I mean, it's American allies. One of the tankers, as you said, one was Japanese and one was Norwegian.
Yeah.
So it's not as if it was a direct attack on America, but they have a massive naval presence there, right? Mm-hmm. So they would immediately be called to assist as well.
Mm-hmm.
But... yeah, you have to wonder where this is going to go. Is it just sort of pot shots, or is it going to be full blown? There's been, you know, for the entire term, there's been the grumbling about Iran. They're looking for another target to go after.
So. And there's, well, it also has to do with...
It'll improve the approval rating in certain circles.
Right, and it also has to do, though, with being heavily leveraged to side with Saudi Arabia, too. Which is another thing we saw this week with Mike Pompeo not putting Saudi Arabia on the list of countries that use child soldiers, which has been reported in Yemen, site of many humanitarian disasters in this proxy war.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
using Canadian-made gear.
That's another area of skepticism, because the Trump administration is so highly. Entangled with Saudi Arabia, because the Saudis are having this relationship with Jared Kushner and business interests with Trump and covering up for Khashoggi. And it's also dangerous because a lot of people have been pointing this out, of so many key vacancies in the administration in terms of, like, positions that don't have a Senate confirmed head. So there's no permanent DHS secretary. There's no permanent UN ambassador, although she was being grilled today. She's missed 300 days out of a 19-month period.
Golf? Was she golfing?
Nobody knows, because apparently some of those records are missing.
She's on a cruise in the Gulf of Oman.
Right. There's no permanent chief of staff. There's no permanent FEMA director. There's no permanent FAA director. There's no permanent defense secretary, which was another big story this week with Patrick Shanahan being forced to withdraw his nomination as the permanent press.
I feel we've had this conversation. This has been going on for a while, hasn't it? I think we had this discussion like a year ago or something.
No, there's always been like a lot of vacancies. But I mean, in terms of high-level vacancies, like in terms of these Senate confirmable positions, like... You know, you need people at the top. I mean, the people at the top don't necessarily come up with policy, but they help direct policy, and then they help secure policy directions that they then take to their boss, the president. But, you know, there's so many empty chairs or chairs being filled with like temporary people who do not have the leverage because there's a temporary before your job title.
Record clean, record wall, and record vacancies in the White House. So,
right. And then, you know, Patrick Shanahan, too. It's these allegations that I think they were published in the Washington Post of domestic violence incidents in the past with members of his family, including an incident where his son hit his wife with a baseball bat.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so, I mean, he had to withdraw his nomination. I mean, it's not good that all this dirty laundry of the family, because it seems like there's maybe some stuff going on in a family that maybe related to mental health or other things. You know, that much of the picture is not clear.
Yeah, that's not necessarily reflected in a police report.
But I mean, here too is another Trump official with a history of domestic violence.
It does seem to be a bit of a pattern there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they sure can pick them, as or at least not pick them.
Or all, yeah.
No, there's no vetting, I don't think. I think to Trump, that guy. I want that guy.
Well, I mean, that was...
He's a good guy.
Going back to, you know, appointing his White House physician to the VA secretary position. Yeah. It's just, you know...
Record health. Perfect health.
Or, like, getting advice
blood
from
pressure
Mar-a-Lago
of a 20-year-old.
Members on the golf course about how to run the VA. It's slapdash anyway.
Yes. We expect nothing less these days.
But it's not all great here in Canada if you are fans of clean water and clean air and other things, because less than 24 hours after passing a climate emergency declaration, we are back on building Trans Mountain Pipeline.
And, of course, everybody just latched right onto that. It was all I saw on my feed. The metaphors were endlessly being spewed. One was the, you know, it's like the smoker who won't quit because it's, well, my taxes will pay for the cancer treatment.
Right, yeah.
You know, that kind of setup. It is a bit, it's not in the timing, is it? Like, it's
no.
To me, this is just my opinion. It seems like a very liberal thing to do. You're jamming all of this, trying to jam all this stuff in before the end of term.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it came up coincidentally or, yes, we're having a climate emergency. Like, do you think people are going to forget 24 hours before? A week or two, you'd say, well, maybe, and somebody would point it out. But this is like, this is a day later. Even Greta Thunberg chimed in. She's like, what is up with Canada, pretty much? What's wrong with you people? Yeah, optics are bad. What was Scheer's company? He's like, where is it? So where is this pipeline? It's like, dude, it's not approved yet. So I don't know. You're magically expecting them to knock it in overnight like it's some kind of mass job creation thing from the 30s. So, yeah, build that pipeline.
Well,
where is it?
Well,
it's coming now. Like, no matter what, the conservatives aren't going to be happy with. There could be like 8 pipelines, but if the liberals are behind it, they'll just, you know, just.
Well, that was
it.
The other thing. Is like Scheer comes out and he says, like, don't make any mistake. This liberals don't want, Justin Trudeau doesn't want to do this. And,
but yet he's doing it.
And there was another conservative MP who said, like, the liberals were the most anti-pipeline government there's ever been. Ever.
who bought a pipeline and are building the twin.
Right. So, I mean, it just calls the point that, you know, Justin Trudeau seems to be making all of Rachel Notley's mistakes. That, you know, I'm going to run on pipelines. I'm the building pipelines guy, but I also care about climate change. So I'm the best of both worlds. Didn't help her. Didn't, like, the messaging is kind of baked in the cake. Everyone who thinks Justin Trudeau's anti-pipeline isn't going to hear that announcement on Tuesday and go, huh, maybe I had Justin Trudeau all wrong. You're the anti-pipeline guy. And I think Aaron Weary at CBC, you know, called it right, that it's going to end up costing him more votes than it's going to get him gaining more votes.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be a Liberal MPP or Liberal MP in Alberta after October.
A sea of blue.
I guarantee it.
But at least it's kind of flushing out the alignment of the other, like, I think the Greens and the NDP at this point are trying to out-green each other. if the messaging is anything to go by, it's, you know, the NDP's policy was released this week, and they're not calling it the Green New Deal. It's like a new deal for the people or something, a slight spin on Green New Deal. And of course the Greens, well, you know, as we know, are seem to be completely anti-pipeline. So
well, Elizabeth May has said on the record there's no way that the pipeline is going to get built.
Really, no.
Well, and, you know, she's been arrested for the cause. Yeah. So, she's like...
And, of course, indigenous groups have come out, too, saying that. Yeah. You know, so it's... The alignments haven't changed. It's becoming clear as to who is in what sphere. Considering the election is 4 months away, that's probably very necessary for all of them to take a stand.
Mm-hmm.
And also having to stand up and be counted was when they had the vote on the climate change emergency. It was a forced vote, and you have to kind of stand up to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they were trying for some optics there because, of course, the Conservatives and the People's Party.
I loved that when I was on the news the other night, and they're like, the Liberals voted against, the Liberals voted in favor along with the NDP, the Greens and Bloc. The Bloc. All the Conservatives and all the People's Party voted against that. It's like, you mean the one guy? the one guy, you mean? But I mean, I guess we could have always said the same about Elizabeth May. We can say the same about Mike Schreiner and Queen's Park, too. But I mean, seemed a bit
but he's
odd.
A defector, though, right? Like, it's a little different.
Yeah,
he wasn't really elected fresh. So,
I mean, I'd love to see, maybe not, but see another People's Party member. Where we're talking about it as like a political movement with sustainability, and it's not just about Mad Max.
Party of two.
Party. It was like kind of like a turd sandwich. This because on Monday we had the climate change emergency. Tuesday we have Trans Mountain. On Wednesday we get the news that the permafrost is melting faster than expected.
I'm at the point now, and I'm probably not alone, I find it difficult to read almost.
Yeah.
You know, you just see the headline, and if it's from a reputable source, you're like, yeah, probably.
Yeah, there's this road that, called the Dempster Highway. No relation to the bread, I think. I didn't have time to get into it.
It's probably turned into bread.
But, yeah, basically, there's portions of it where the road is just this, like, sort of elevated gravel road.
Right on so-called permafrost.
That goes from the Arctic Circle down into, you know, the main interior of the Northwest Territories. But, like, there are parts of it that are collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
There's one part of it where they had a sinkhole. Where they called it the $1 million hole because that's basically how much gravel they had to pour into it in order to fix it.
Man.
Because this is like a main thoroughfare if you're trying to get between the Arctic Circle and mainland.
And your diesel
Canada
truck.
Interior. Yeah. So it's, you know, you have in the middle, you have this thing that is only going to exacerbate the problem. They're also, the National Energy Board, mind you, said that this is going to have a negative effect on killer whales on the BC coast. They still approved it in that report and said, you know what, killer whales, you're going to take it up the hoo-ha. We still approve. So it's, you know, even the people approving these projects are aware of, like, the negative environmental effects.
And, yeah. Sled dogs running across water as opposed to ice.
Oh, my goodness.
Mammoth tusks sticking out of the ground. So
yeah.
I heard that had been happening in I think it was in northern Russia as well, where people were like, you know, that you can't really trade in ivory anymore, but you can trade in mammoth tusks, which is kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
But it seems that is happening full stop. Now, you know, it's Canada will argue, well, it's not just us, it's other, but it's us, it's all of us. So,
well, I mean,
climate emergency indeed.
Yeah, I mean,
pipeline not going to help.
No, and I mean, as per sheriff, like we have a relatively small population in Canada, but our share of carbon emissions is big as compared to other places. It's we are part of the problem, and I think we're going to go into an election where you're going to hear a lot of the same old arguments about, you know, well, we wanted to take action on climate change, but, you know, what about China? What about India? And, yeah, fair point. I mean, however, they're just sort of like following in our example in terms of, you know, we're going to pollute as much as as much as we can. Pollute till you drop. And then we had Andrew Scheer come out Wednesday with his climate strategy, which is kind of cut from the same cloth as Doug Ford and the Ontario PC's climate strategy. Which is la 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 la.
I kind of missed that. What was the gist of that? I'm sure it wasn't
it's going to eliminate the carbon tax while forcing large-scale polluters to reinvest in clean energy technology. So basically, they're taking out the middleman.
So it's aspirational then. It's like,
right, they're taking out the middleman of carbon tax, and they're going to say to companies, okay, like move away from all this carbon-based energy and invest in green energy. Okay, we're going to leave the room now, and you're going to do it. Okay, bye.
As we know, self-policing is garbage in any instance, but particularly in the corporate instance, because they will do nothing. They will do zero.
Right.
They will spew oil into the Gulf of Mexico. There's no accountability.
Yeah, it's
at all.
Not
garbage plan.
It's next. It's not even a plan.
That's me ripping the plan up.
It's not even a plan because, you know, how do you...
A non-plan.
Because the essence of conservatism is sort of like leave business alone. And so you're saying that you're going to make business do something without there being like any kind of like... immediate knowable penalty, like, and that's the point of the carbon tax, is like we're going to tax this, which is also actually a conservative way to go. We want to, you know, tax this so that if you want to find a cheaper way, maybe you can actually go to one of these clean energy things, you know, buying solar power, buying renewable energy, buying wind power, what have you,
which is becoming cheaper than ever. And, you know,
getting
if you want
cheaper
to be
by the day,
if you want to be free marketeers, and it's competitive, it's super competitive now. It wasn't for years. It is now.
Right.
So do you not invest?
And it's almost like the opposite of the liberal problem, where the liberals are saying, like, we're building a pipeline. It's cool. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be great middle class jobs.
Pipey, yeah.
Even though it's, you know, I was actually reading like business reporting, and somebody was saying like a pipeline is like it's not a bad investment, but it's not a great investment because it's like a fairly steady return, rate of return over the years. And so like when you're actually investing in something, you want to see sort of like something scale. You want to see it like go up in terms of the rate of return. But having said that, the conservative problem is reversed. We're going to, instead of paying lip service to building the or maybe not lip service, instead of like saying, you know, we're going to build a pipeline, the conservative problem is like, we are supporting oil and gas whole hog, and here's this climate plan we came up with one day, you know, it's at the end of the meeting, we're all kind of tired, we wanted to go home, but
it's
had to get
Friday,
this done.
It's 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
We're watching the basketball.
Where we're going to ask the, you know, the biggest polluters to, you know, pull themselves up by their bootstraps or something.
Please, people who gave us a bunch of money, do something. Yeah.
Right. And
no.
Yeah. So, and the reverse is true too. Nobody who believes in combating climate change is going to believe that Andrew Scheer is going to be a climate leader.
No. So, not at all.
So you have Trudeau building pipelines, wanting people to believe he's a climate leader. You have Andrew Scheer with a half-hearted climate plan, wanting you to believe he's just enough of a climate leader to get the votes he needs to get a majority government.
And then I have everybody else going, hell no, we don't want this at all.
Yeah.
But as we're coming to the end of term, there'll be lots of bills still sitting in the pipeline, huh? Which may, you know, there's probably too much to be processed by the end of the week. Now, as to whether, you know, obviously, if we don't see a liberal government again, well, I mean, the legislation dies either way, right?
They all have to go back.
They could revive it depending on the results in October. But yeah, it's going to be a long barbecue season, I think. What's the actual day they're adjourning? Is it Friday or?
I think so.
Yeah. And then they're off to the cottage. Oh, sorry, not the cottage. Back to their writings. Back to the AgaCon's. No, sorry, they're going to their writings to campaign.
You know, to Justin Trudeau's credit, he had a very busy Monday where he's meeting with human rights officials from the UN at like 8 o'clock in the morning, goes to Toronto for the Raptors parade at noon, goes back to Ottawa for another thing, and then was in Quebec, I think Montreal, in the evening for a pride event.
And that's why he didn't get booed, probably.
And that's the wrap for our news segment this week. I will add that since we recorded that yesterday evening, Iran shot down an unmanned drone in and around the same area. Donald Trump had vague promises about future things. Wait and see, he said. So we'll have to wait and see what he's going to wait and see about. In the meantime, we have a guest in studio, Mike Salisbury, War 4 counselor. We're going to talk to him after our normal ad and musical break. You're listening to Open Sources here
on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And that's a little flashback to the turn of the millennium. Why, I don't know. I fell down a YouTube hole and I rediscovered Serial Joe the other day. And that was Mistake. It's from their 1999 album Face Down. And it's a little CanCon, so it checks all our boxes here on CFRU. It's not new. It's CanCon. It's rock. A bunch of young people from suburban Toronto. So why not? I'm now being joined by Ward 4 City Councilor Mike Salisbury. Mike, thanks for stopping by today.
Good afternoon, Adam. How are you doing?
I am very well. I know that you had a busy day. We've been talking about that. But I want to talk about some busy times at council. And I want to start by sort of flashing back to December.
I have a hard time remembering, like Monday. We're going to December? Okay.
We'll get to Monday.
Santa Claus. I recall that.
But no, there was the, I'm sure you'll remember the development, just 361 Whitelaw Road, huge development. And I remembered you said that discussion around council, that development was going to set a tone for council. And, now that we're over half a year into council, I'm wondering, do you feel your prediction has held up, that has set a tone for the council term so far?
Well, I think so. And I mean, my take on it when that came forward is new council, recent election, developer comes forward and asks for the moon and the stars,
and
strategically that makes sense. Hey, let's test the water. Let's see how far we can go. They got a pretty solid earful that suggested that perhaps there is not an appetite for hyperdensity. And I mean, now you've got Councillor Piper, with regards to the climate emergency, talking about not supporting applications that fail to be net zero. So, there's an evolution, but I think we saw a couple, what I would recall hyperdense.
Right.
Applications come forward, and they took an earful back.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that developers are hearing that, though? Because what I've kind of, from my own observation, is that we kind of see various councillors carving niches for themselves, whether that's on affordable units, whether that's on, as you said, Councillor Piper with net zero things, whether that's density, in areas where there isn't any density, Is your sense that the developers are maybe hearing that, or maybe we're just so far along in some of these applications that maybe it hasn't gone downstream yet?
No, I would say that they're definitely hearing it. It costs nothing to ask,
right?
So, I don't fault them for asking, but I think, with regards to Whitelaw, there's a threshold to that where you go, okay, now you're being ridiculous. I mean, there was just some really creative stuff that I had never seen before. Mm-hmm. I talked to our staff. They had never seen before. I talked to the applicant's consultant. I said, look, what you're doing here is really, really unique. Have you ever seen this before? He'd never seen it before. So I'm looking at it, it was a foot in the water for sure. And we haven't seen anything at yet. It will come back eventually, but I haven't seen anything yet to see how well that sunk in. But I think it was pretty clear.
Did you hear a lot about it from the neighborhood? I mean, that's your neck of the woods.
Yes, absolutely. It's definitely it was a neighborhood, but it was also citywide. I mean, there was a lot of questions about what that represented in terms of what we were doing. And to a certain degree, there over the last term, the previous term, I think there was a willingness to explore an increase in density for one thing or another. And then the question started to ask, okay, where do we stand on this? Are we meeting our targets? Are we exceeding our targets? And it came back that, oh yeah, yeah, we're ahead of the curve. Okay, we don't need to do that.
Right. And there are curves. Because I think the problem comes from a couple of places. One is that we are meeting our targets, but in terms of meeting certain demands like affordability, like one room, one bedroom accommodations and things. And then on the other end, we're kind of seeing this bizarre, from what I understand from talking to people who know planning, is that you have this bizarre thing where it's the outside of town. Or the around the borders of town, we're getting the high density and not the interior.
The donut effect.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's interesting because we had a bit of a pre-consultation meeting with regards to some development in that area, and you know, while at this point in time, that West End node is right on the border.
Yeah.
It will not always be. It will maybe not in my lifetime, but I mean, the growth between Kitchener-Waterloo, Cambridge, Guelph, I mean, that's the area that things will grow. So as we, at some point, we will expand out towards 32.
Right.
At which point that node is only faced on three sides.
Right.
So from a planning perspective, you go, well, that sort of seems odd. Well, it is odd. It's just ahead of its time, and it'll fill out.
Right.
So you know, the idea and the argument that if we're going to have density, we should have it in a node is a valid approach. But we're starting to see some really cool things happening on the other side of there was a co-housing development that came forward that received a lot of support, and you know, it's controversial. They're going to be stretching the limits in terms of, you know, the standard things. You know, how, do we really need that much parking for people who don't drive in a development that is geared towards that? There's Bob Bell's, you know, work towards creating modular housing for emergency shelters,
right,
which will open the door to the conversation of tiny house zones, which will open the door to saying, do we, in the event of a tiny house development, or do we need any parking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's radical thinking, and that's right on the other side of the coin. So there's a lot of really, really interesting things happening in that kind of area.
I'd love to have Bob come in and talk about it. Anyway,
Bob, do you hear that?
Well, that was
calling Bob.
That
Bob,
was my
Adam
subtle
calling Bob.
Yeah, my subtle way of pointing that out. You representing the West End. I also want to talk about what's going on in terms of the changes to the DCs and creating the community benefit, all that stuff with 108. We've heard about how it's going to maybe have an effect on whether or not we get a South End Community Center, whether or not we're going to get a main branch of the library, or what the impacts there are going to be. What do you think the impacts are going to be on Ward 4
well,
in the West End?
I'm not trying to slam your competition here, but I watch the CBC in the morning, and every now and again they will spend, you know, 2 hours talking about something that hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it dawns on me, it's like, okay, there's a threat, you know, really, we don't know.
Right.
And Bill 108, and it's well on its way. I mean, it represents a change of the rules of play. There's a question as to where the logic comes from, and is it logical? Does it make sense? And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
Right.
That's the rules of play. And if they change those rules, we're going to need to adapt and change to what that new reality represents.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I really don't know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it hasn't really landed yet. I know our staff are jumping through all kinds of hoops trying to get the jump on this. I have not really drilled down hard into any of that because it's not here yet. And so if they change the rules of play and it's going to make an impact, our staff are going to look at it and go, okay, here's what this means, and here's some options for you to consider. And it's at that point that I'm going to, you know, do my research and get up to speed and go, okay, what can we do about it? So I'll be honest with you. I mean, it's an omnibus bill that touches everything from, you know, from cannabis to the Planning Act. I'm not a big fan of that approach to governance. And I have no idea what the impacts will be. I don't think, you know, Mr. Ford has an idea what the impacts are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
So I know this is a report coming on Monday from Tara Baker, the treasurer. Do you have concerns? I mean, other than just like the big you know, the unknown, which I think is everybody's concern.
Well, I mean, do I have concerns? If it represents less resources to do the things we want to do, we're going to have choices to make. That's the job. So, you know, I'm concerned, but that's you know, a change comes up, a major event transpires. The game is always changing. It's about looking at it and saying, okay, what options do we have? What, you know, weighing them and try to figure out what's the best way forward. And we'll do that. And it may be very difficult, and we may have some difficult choices to make. But it's hard for me to second guess what those are, because we haven't really landed on that yet.
I'm going to ask another hypothetical, but
because I love those.
It's
Thank
because
you.
It's because you're a maverick. I think you're a maverick on council.
A horse. Nice. I appreciate that.
But I asked this to Councillor Downer last week, that, you know, some stuff is going to be baked in the cake, like how much development charges you can get. But, you know, there are things like it changes the Endangered Species Act. Would you theoretically support, like, if someone brought forward a developmental proposal where they're going to build on land where there's an endangered species and they want to use this provision where you can pay a fee instead of protecting habitat?
What do they call it? Pay to kill? Pay to slay.
But, you know, would you theoretically just uphold the old endangered species rules and then let the chips fall where they may?
If I thought that in doing so, there was any reasonable chance of a different outcome. But again, when the rules of play change and they come to us and say, okay, we're allowed to do this and we want to do this, what do you think? And we turn it down and it goes, you know, I mean, they're looking at getting rid of LPAT and going back to rubber stamp. And they spend the money and they get it through anyways, and maybe some things that we don't want, additional things that we don't want. So when it's tough, you know, there's nothing really you can do when the rules of the game change, except to try to entice with other things. You can say, well, hey, you know what, you're looking for this, why don't we get a little, you know, some horse trading?
Right.
And it becomes more of a market, more of a political exercise. But if somebody's, you know, hell bent and says, look, we're allowed to do this. This is what we want to do. And if you say no, we're going to appeal it. That's a tough position to go against, you know.
Right.
And I think that's the only option. Is we look at it and we say, okay, we recognize that is what you can do.
Right.
However, continues to be a number of things that we have the choice over.
Yeah.
And there's carrots and sticks that we can try to influence the outcome, but when the rules of the game change, that's the rules of the game. That's what the
I mean, then there'll be political pressure on the other side too, because, you know, thinking back to Hanlon Creek Business Park, people like settled there, entrenched on the assumption that the Jefferson salamander was somewhere there. Not necessarily there was proof that the salamander was there.
And you know, businesses are I was going to say businesses are people too. That's not entirely accurate. But the people that run businesses are people too.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know, you come before council and say we want to kill Bambi and put up a parking lot, and the community freaks out. There's a price to pay.
Yeah.
You know, there's public opinion as well. You know, the famous phrase, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Right.
And that I think comes into play, especially when you've got something that's really divisive and clearly not friendly to the world.
Right.
And, you know, we have a pretty powerful voice in this community. And, you know, if you want to do business here and sell your houses here or run your, you know, this kind of thing, it's always best to join in rather than be the outsider.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's leave the realm of the hypothetical and talk about something a bit more actual. We have the review of the leash-free park and leash-free areas coming up on Monday, too. We in Ward 4... have rather, I think, a crown jewel of parks of Margaret Green, pretty big park right there in the center of our ward. I say our ward, I live in Ward 4. So what, you know, are your concerns about leash-free? Because I'm just observing, you didn't do a lot of talking during that subject at committee this month.
Well, thank you for noticing. I'm trying to be more judicious in my You know, I like the sound of my own voice as much as anyone else, but
it's a lovely voice.
Thank you. you know, I mean, there we have policies in place right now for leash free.
Mm-hmm.
It has its pros, its cons. It has its problems. It has, you know, I think there is a desire for many dog owners to have a place where they can feel more comfortable letting their dogs off leash to play with other dogs and not have to be as vigilant perhaps as they need to be. I think it's a, you know, I think what was presented to council was a what appeared to be an either or.
Right.
And I think there's room for, you know, I mean, if we're going to put in leash free parks, which is a great idea, that doesn't mean we need to completely eliminate leash-free status. It may, right. Maybe you modify it a bit and you go, okay, there are some parks that there have been problems and we're going to, I remember when, I'm a mountain biker, when they, the forest on Court right there.
Yes.
I forget what the name of that was. We used to ride there and it was environmentally sensitive and they said, look, we don't want mountain bikes in here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you may have dog parks that, you know, you got a lot of problems, a lot of issues. And so you go, okay, we're not going to have a leash free. We've got a leash free next door. We're not going to have a leash free here. But Margaret Green, there may be no problem.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we need to necessarily throw the puppy out with the bathwater. You like that? you know, and say just because we've enhanced our amenities for leash free doesn't mean we have to forbid dogs from being leash free if there's historically no problem.
Right. And I wonder if,
and by the way, there will always be outliers. There will always be
Absolutely. People
in the, you know, the best case scenario who will say this is a horrible idea or that is a horrible idea. You know, there will be arguments for both sides of that.
And I wonder if maybe we're getting into that a bit here, because when you look at the report, that the memo that staff came up with, and you look at Marker Green Park, there's some fields where it's a no-go for having dogs off a leash, and then other fields where, yes, you can have the dog off the leash, even though, you know, there's kind of no separation of you know, mm-hmm. the various, like one soccer field flows into another soccer field flows into the ball diamond.
And I think it was brought to the attention that one of the very first issues that the newly minted city of Guelph had to face, you know, back in the 1800s or whatever, was leash free or dog control bylaws, right?
So this spanning 191 years. Yeah.
They were older dogs back then, but they were good dogs.
They made the journey all the way from Scotland too. Before we run out of time, I do want to address this one thing, and it kind of gets into an area where we kind of have gotten into trouble before. Uh-oh. With the closed meetings. But, you know, I saw this again on Monday night with the AGM for yep. Junction Railroad, where you're trying to talk about things that were in closed meeting. Are they public now?
Well, and that's it. I mean, we have, let's say there's an issue with an identifiable individual, and we make a decision that we're going to close a program and it will end up in, you know, they're going to lose a job. I'm not saying that's the case here, but it's just an example. And that's confidential, right? Because you need to respect that.
Might not know.
They may not know, right?
Yeah. Theoretically.
Having said that, if you then bring it out into open
and
it becomes an issue, in the case last night or earlier was I wanted to get I had asked a question of staff that I wasn't particularly satisfied with, not the answer, but the quality of the answer. I did.
Right.
I thought, you know what? I didn't get the answer. You know, I didn't get an answer. I kind of got. I wasn't satisfied.
Right.
I wanted to get a different opinion on the issue. That would have affected how perhaps I would have liked to move forward in that.
Mm.
It was procedural things are kind of weird in that way.
But I just it occurs to me that, and the words of the Amberley Gavel is the inspector of the closed meetings.
By the way, that last one, you know, that was. You know, to say we had a rotten meeting and then go, well, now you're talking about a closed meeting, and, you know, that was the approach that they took. I didn't agree with that, but apparently that was his report, that kind of thing.
But what his report got the last time he was before council was that, you know, council seems to lean on going closed when maybe you don't have to go closed, that the standard should be...
You know what? It's pretty clear. I mean, you've got a criteria, security, legal... identifiable individuals. There's a certain criteria, and I'll, to the mayor's credit, and of course you would not know this because it's a closed meeting.
That's right.
He's pretty hard on that. There are often times where the line of questioning will begin to enter into something. Say we're back for a legal opinion, and we get a legal opinion, then we say, well, should it be blue or red? And he'll say, well, that's not really a legal question. That should be asked the other side. So he's pretty much on top of it. Not that anyone would know. I don't know how anyone would ever, know that he is or is not on top of that. But he keeps a pretty tight rein on that. And because there's always criticism, it says, oh, you're doing all this backroom deals and blah, blah, blah. Well, no, there's sometimes if you're dealing with something that is really volatile, could result in legal issues coming up or significant risk to the city, you have to maintain confidentiality a lot of the time.
Right. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist on this, but again, being an observer and watching two people have a conversation where they're trying to talk around the subject of the conversation is a bit tough, but I'll leave that there for now. Mike, if people want to reach out and ask you about leech laws or anything, how can people talk to you?
The easiest way is mike.salisbury@guelph.ca, and that's Salisbury like the steak, S-A-L-I-S-B-U-R-Y. That's the easiest way to reach out to me, and I will respond.
How many Salisbury steak trucks do you get in a week, average?
I use the line more than other people do.
It's old news.
Yep.
Old news. Anyway, thanks so much for coming by, Mike. I really appreciate you giving me your time and your insights. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Adam.
And I'm afraid that is it for this week's show. We hope you enjoyed it. You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. You can find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire and on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you would like to listen to the show again, you can do so by downloading it from our website every Monday or on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, one of those podcast apps you surely have on your telephone device. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can check out my news and politics site, GuelphPolitico.ca. Scotty Hertz can be found at Scotty Hertz on Facebook and Twitter, and you can find his political and not-so-political writings on spannerbook.wordpress.com. We'll have him back live and in person next week for more than half the show. Anyway, DJ sounds good to me. He's queuing up in the next room. She is preparing her playlist for this week's show, and that will be at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And for Thursday at 5 p.m., it is time for Open Sources, and it will be again next Thursday at 5 p.m., and we'll see you then.